Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a 20-year veteran of the live event industry, a musician, and an LED tech / media server operator who has worked with artists such as Duran Duran, John Legend, The Weeknd, Shakira, Hugh Jackman, and on the VMAs and the Grammy Awards. His new single is dropping on February 26th with a full-length release on April 2nd for his collective, The Gamma Senin. In this episode, we discuss experiencing loss, retreating, reflecting, choosing wellness one small habit at a time, and the wonders that come from taking care of plants. You can find him on Instagram at dr_m_11 and at the Gamma Senin. Here is my conversation with the plant lover, Kevin McGuire. Hey, Kevin, how's it going? And what have you been up to? It's so nice to have you on the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Jenny. Well, it's going good. I would have to say it's nice to have like the doom and gloom of 2020 be over. I feel like 2021 has just kind of, you know, people are more into picking up the pieces and being a little bit careful and still being willing to going out there. And it sounds like work is starting to pick up, I hope. So, you know, So yeah, I'm good. I spend my days just trying to do my record label stuff and find out what's going on with the industry, about getting back to work as a tech. And then I have I'm growing kale and tomatoes. So I have some seedlings and some fiddly fig trees that I like to keep I watch grow.
Well, I'm definitely going to ask you about that because I have one snake plant that I'm not really sure how it's alive. I know they don't need a lot. So
they just need love, just like anything else. You know, they're a frequency that need love, just like all other beings on this planet. So, you know, once you realize how they talk, it's easy to listen to them and understand what they need.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, we'll definitely get into that. But could you start by sharing a little bit about what your story is and how you got into the industry?
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So I've basically always kind of helped my friends' rock bands or were involved in some sort of theatrical performance when you were a kid. And when I was in high school, you know, I play guitar and I would always be involved in a theater program as a stage manager or helping my friends' bands load into clubs because, you know, I snuck out of the house and went to rock shows and stuff like that. And eventually that led to me going to broadcasting school in San Francisco State while I was throwing parties in the electronic music scene in like the late 90s. And my family's from Los Angeles, pretty much. We had some family that worked on some shows down the street from us in LA, and San Francisco was at the height of the dot-com movement, the first one. So it was really tough for like a blue-haired, for lack of a better term, raver rocker kid to find a place to live. So I moved back down to LA and I wanted to play in bands and pursue a music career and work. And my brother had a connection through our neighbors who wrote like Anna Green Gables, and he was working doing lights on like Behind the Music. So I dropped out of broadcasting school and went to work at the Playboy Mansion and did a lot of moving light, like tech work for those events like that. And one thing leads to another. You find yourself in warehouses learning technology. I learned a certain type of creative LED that worked very well for me. And I did 10 Grammy Awards and a lot of movies like Iron Man 2 and The Jungle Book and music videos. And that led to concert touring because I had had experiences touring in bands on my own. So like getting into a van wasn't an issue for me in my lifestyle. Let me go and join the circus. So I joined the circus. I'm now 40 years old. So I've been doing this my entire life. I definitely was throwing those clubs in San Francisco when I was like 19. I've gone from van tours to front of house at Shakira being the media server operator. So the past few years before the pandemic, I kind of pivoted from actually like setting up LED to mainly just running shows at front of house and helping program and learning that with the Disguise media servers. And I'd taken Shakira around the world. I toured with Duran Duran before that. I helped program the Hugh Jackman tour. Was on a team for that. And I did cruise ships and some musicals last 2019. And most recently, my one job really in the music world in 2020 was Ariana Grande's 34-35 music video doing their server work. And I was really grateful to have those 4 days of work. It's really good.
Four great days.
I mean, I think I had like, normally I would be on tour or working award shows, or I've done so many VMAs over the years. It's, I mean, this, I have all these passes from all these bands, just like many roadies do. I would normally be home for maybe like 40 to 90 days a year for a decade, you know, and I'd be gone or in between or not really. And maybe like those stretches would be like, because there was Coachella and you were just in Los Angeles, or because you did the Grammys and you were in LA, but you were working, you know, so it was a real big reset last year.
Yeah. Something that I find interesting is that at 19, you started, you know, you said you joined the circus later on, but it seems like it was always kind of off the beaten road sort of lifestyle that you were living since you were 19.
Yeah, I definitely went to San Francisco to kind of get out of LA, and, you know, clubs in San Francisco come with kind of all the fun of that. And it was definitely not the normal path for how to get into the industry. And I'm sure there are easier ways to do it, but, you know, I had a great time. I threw some big parties. We did a lot of fun things. Working at the Playboy Mansion has its own set of unique stories and all, you know, I used to do bar mitzvahs for people setting up projections and screens when I was younger. And, you know, you just, in the industry, you just take the jobs you take and hopefully they lead somewhere. And for me, it led to 10 Grammy Awards and Shakira and John Legend and The Weeknd and Duran Duran and some fun times and some tough times, you know, but it was good. It was good.
That's amazing. I have a space heater on. I need to turn it off.
Getting a little, you got a hoodie on.
It's like the glamorous life of podcasting from your bedroom.
Yeah. You know, it's not, it's funny because it's the same thing with everything. Like going to a show seems so glamorous, but it's not backstage. Or, you know, I made this record and I'd always have dreams of like being on a record label and all these things. And quite honestly, being my career had led me to a place where I could afford to be my own record label. And now I'm my own record label. And it's not glamorous. I thought people were going to write articles about me. And it turns out that I just write a lot about myself so people could read it.
So it's a lot of talking about yourself.
Supposed to be more champagne and like stuff like that, you know?
Oh, that's a great point that you bring up, because when I started the podcast, like my main thing was the average person looks at the industry and they just see this glamorous place. You know, it's like, it's just all fun and games all the time and it's all good. And even me, you know, like I was, you know, I talked to you about the long relationship that I was in. And even then I was like, oh yeah, like this is great. Cause I, you know, I would go out on tour with them and it was super fun. Like I got to, you know, experience all the fun parts. Like I remember being at Red Rocks and like just going hiking by myself, which was not safe because there's like mountain lions, but
oh, it's anyway. Totally safe. Red Rocks is such a commercial area.
I don't know though. I'm pretty sure like a couple months later, there was something about somebody getting attacked by like a wild beast. I was like, oh God.
One. I mean, what are the numbers, you know, like.
What are the chances?
Anyway,
right?
But anyway, I
got to do that because I mean, I don't have anything else to do. And in the meantime, you know, everybody's working. And so, you know, when it finally clicked for me that like, it's a real job and it's like, it's a real industry. It's a real business. Like it's not all fun and games. And then there's actually a lot of nitty gritty stuff that goes into it. You know, that part, like you said, sometimes it doesn't quite make sense to the average person.
Well, it's really interesting because the average person sees the show at night and they have some drinks at the show. And then like, you know, I can't tell you how many times my friends would be like, so after the show, like we're all going to hang out. And it's like, I've taken all that stuff down. I put it in the truck. I go to shower. I take a bus. I go see the same 30 people I've seen for the past 3 months and, you know, let go of all of this, whatever happened during the course of the day. Because at the end of the day, the like people on tour, it's like whether you're male or female, you are an alpha and you are touring is really unique because each person is there because they are extremely important for the tour and they do a very unique job that basically one person handles. You know, there may be a team, but you're a member of a team that you could cover for each other, but everyone's brain is there for a reason, you know, and you have to make a lot of choices all day long about how, you know, can I trust this guy to connect the shackle to the motor that holds this 15,000 pound wall that I just met that looks high as a stagehand, you know, and you make all these like high level decisions really quickly. And it just looks like fun and games because we don't really talk about it and we stay in the shadows and we go from town to town and it looks like we're just like a bunch of dirty pirates or something like that. And at the end of the day, it's really a industrial job set to music that depending on what tour you're like, has almost like a militarized rollout. And I say that because everything is very effective and it like Trans-Siberian Orchestra, for example, I did that tour for a little bit. It was my first arena tour and I by far was not ready as a person to be out in that lifestyle and that hard of work. But those guys do 12 to 14 shows a week in 6 cities. They don't stop. They work from basically 5 in the morning to 2 in the morning every day and drive from city to city, you know, and it doesn't make sense. And it just becomes this vortex. And, you know, that we don't as an industry, or at least we haven't up until I think now, we haven't really implemented a way to help people with their mental health, you know, other than people think sobriety is a cure-all for mental health, which is sobriety is great. And people need that on the road. And, you know, the Friends of Bill W and AA meetings and all that stuff is great, but it's not the only solution for everyone. And it's not a one size fits all. And the mental health of just exhaustion on the road is very real. not many people know about that type of stuff. We make it look good. We're in the entertainment industry. We're supposed to be glitz and glamour. We're not supposed to tell you what it's like to wait in the lobby of a hotel room for 4 hours for your room.
It's interesting that you bring up that sobriety ends up being kind of like the catch-all of mental health because, you know, historically people look at the music industry and they think, oh, you know, it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. If you take out the drug, I was going to say the sex, like why would you take out the sex? But if you take
why
out
would
the
you
drugs,
take out the drugs?
But if you take out the drugs, you know, then everybody gets, you know, all the time to themselves and they get to sleep and they get to live a normal, happy life. But it's like, it's not that, like what? Why do you think people just kind of try to dumb it down so much?
I think that people take what works for them and make it a all-in-one solution for everyone. And, you know, I think that, I mean, I'm 40 years old. I'm kind of older now. There's new generations of roadies out there that are going to school. And like, I couldn't believe anyone would go to school to be a roadie. That's insane to me. I get like paid to learn this. But everyone has these stories about like Led Zeppelin driving a motorcycle through the Riot House and these like crazy nights or their Motley Crue fantasies. And, you know, I was talking the other day to this guy that was, he worked at Warner Brothers for, he was ahead of Fleetwood Mac and Van Halen, and the type of hijinks and stories that he lived in the 70s are legendary. And we have this like twisted fantasy that none of that comes with consequences. And then for those people, it was like, oh my God, I can't do that anymore. So everybody else has to fit into my box. And, you know, I see in a lot of American crews, you have the sobriety people, and that's great. And that works and it helps. I mean, I've definitely been happier on tours where I was not drinking or partaking in things as heavily as I was on others. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into being a happy and healthy person. And that has to do with simple things like water intake, sleeping properly, healthy food choices, you know, not eating that fourth slice of pizza that's been sitting there for 3 hours on the bus just because it's there, you know, and then like checking in with people. Crew guys are, for the most part, we're really tough. Like we toughen up, buttercup, and move forward. Like showing emotion for alpha man is a sign of weakness for most of the time. So, you know, sobriety helps because you're no longer numbing yourself from experiencing emotion. But if you still don't take the steps to experience that emotion and deal with it, you could be drunk or sober, and you're still going to be kind of an a-hole. I don't know if I could say the real word, but you know, that's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it really speaks to the fact that there's so much more involved, and you know, there's this this term that we like to use in wellness, which is like holistic, right? So mm-hmm. if you can approach things with a holistic mind, you start to realize that wellness isn't just eating the right food in and of itself. It's not just staying away from alcohol in and of yeah. itself. It's not just getting your workout in every day in and of itself. It's actually doing a little bit that moves you toward a bigger goal of overall wellness every day so that it becomes a part of your lifestyle. And it's yeah. not so much of a punishment. It's really just little things that you do.
Well, that's also so correct. And it's a harder thing for, I think culturally for us to understand, because it's a paradigm shift between like having a cheat day in a diet world, between understanding what I put into my body makes me feel better in multiple different ways. Like being home for the past year, and now that my girlfriend works constantly and I'm home, it's my responsibility to make sure that when she walks in the door, there's some food around, you know. And that was a reprogramming for me, because I've been eating catering for 15 years and I'm not a cook. I just swiped the car. We went out for sushi or something like that. And those are just, so now, you know, I'm not vegan and I'm not vegetarian. I joke that I make a vegan bowl for both of us, but I eat it with like a 12 ounce New York strip steak every night. And I feel so much better because I'm eating this raw chard and kale and carrots and quinoa and all these things. And I'm being more conscious about drinking water during the day. When I have too much coffee, my mind starts to spin out somewhere. And I kind of check in with myself every couple of hours just to make sure that I'm doing things that are keeping my mind in a positive place, rather than like going to the levels, the despair and the vortex that exists in this like COVID world, especially for live entertainment workers. I mean, I talk to all my roadie buddies as much as I can. And everyone is struggling with something very unique and very powerful. And it's important to check in with yourself and make healthy decisions. And food, your breathing, stretching, moving your body, doing something that's positive for you in your economic sense, and then positive for you in your physical and happiness sense. And that's what healthy is. It's not eating kale and carrots and drinking juice all day. Like, it's definitely not smoking cigarettes, but you know, you can have a glass of wine. You just can't have a half a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah. You know? I mean, a lot of it, I think, does come down to your your mental state. I mean, it's really all in your head. And when we find ourselves in a place where we have to stop and really evaluate where we've been, because we haven't given ourselves the time to actually understand like what it is that we need in order to be happy and to feel good. Like that's what I think one of the most important things. Did you go through a period of time when tours halted where you started to realize like, hey, I need to figure out who I am and what I need?
Yeah, I actually, you know, that process kind of, it's weird because I think that that kind of happened to me in 2016. And then in October, November of 2019, I got another like real kind of like awakening before COVID started happening. Like in 2016, I was really miserable. I was just always on the road, failed relationships because of it, you know, grown adolescent male behavior basically. And I had already kind of gone through the process of trying to seek therapy, get some help and to try and like quell the demons and like why all this stuff was happening to me. And that led to me realizing that I had no goals outside of just work anymore. So I had to find like, what was my passion? And that was always to make a record. So I made this record with all my friends from all these big acts and things that I worked with over the years and all my connections. And, you know, I pushed for a very hard time, long time, very hard to get that done. And I was I'd go on tour with Duran Duran and then come home and do a recording session and go right out on tour with BTS and then come home and do another recording session or pay for this and then rush out to another thing. And I pushed myself really, really hard to do that. So yeah, I never had time to look back. Like I couldn't even make sense of most of my life from touring because I never looked back. But in November of 2019, I really just like put the brakes on. In 2019, I had an uncle that passed away from Parkinson's. That meant a lot to me. Sorry, I wasn't ready for that. And I had another uncle that was older and that passed away. And I had flew home for a day on tour with Shakira from DC when my uncle had fallen pretty bad in the year before in 2018. And I saw him in the hospital in like the grips of Parkinson's. And you kind of realize what you miss when you see the people around you like that. You know, so as 2019 happened, I had three or four family deaths from outside family members that really made going away difficult. It affected my work. If I had some really high pressure jobs with like Hugh Jackman or that went okay. You know, these are tough gigs that we do and it's very high pressure and the isolation and all the hours they add up. And, you know, that life on the road just started taking its toll on me. And it was coming out in different ways because, you know, was I drinking as much? Not really. You know, took it, you know, ebbs and flows, but never sober, never like out of control anymore. But spiritually speaking, I was tired and I hadn't looked back. So I came home from programming the Donna Summer musical, this theater show that was going out. And I just was like, I'm done for a while. I'm taking time off. This has been too much this year. I have enough money to finish my record and float some shit on some credit cards. But I'm going to start doing yoga and eating better and like course correct this shit so I could go into having a very successful and profitable 2020 where I was to release my record. And I had a client in Intel for the Olympics and I had a main stage act at Coachella and I was going on tour with Steve Miller. So it like I was doing all of that reprogramming just at the worst possible time to take off of work. And, but luckily I was already kind of prepared for this cosmic paradigm shift that happens. You know, astrologers will say that we were entering into the age of the Aquarian age, which is an age where all the masks come off of this older time, and that intelligence and spirituality will start having this new found information age where everything will be more community based and more sharing of information. And I think as we've seen the reset happen, and I don't say that in some conspiracy terms, as we all got sent home, a lot of things happen to a person when that happens. And that, like in like us, therapeutic ways, they'll call that a retreat, and you'll go on these retreats. And the first thing about a retreat is to go back, reflect, regroup in order to go forward stronger. And I think to me, that's really what the message should be. While we're all trying to figure this out, sure, there's like the existential dread of of all of our financial futures in the entertainment industry, but there's hopefully some good that exists for people. And I hope that they could get the paradigm shift and ride that wave into a better place. You know, like it's good to look back. And like you were saying about what a healthy lifestyle is, you got to make healthy choices. And I think life on the road does not lead to healthy choices. And hopefully this reshift, this reprogramming that we all went to, will give us a little bit more empathy and compassion as road crew members as we move from city to city. And I'm sure I'm going to get nicknames from my friends for saying anything like that.
Well, you know, actually, I am familiar with the age of Aquarius. I'm into astrology and stuff. One of the things that, you know, at least in my personal life, that helped me transition into a place where I was ready to start taking care of myself, to start learning about other people, to start learning from other people, which I think is a very big theme that we're seeing right now, was having to experience loss.
Yeah.
Having to experience death, and the feeling of knowing that it's not forever, because it's so easy to get lost in your work, and it's so easy to just go with the motions, and it's so easy to get caught up in bullshit. Like, you know, I mean, all of us are stuck on our screens, staring at the internet, getting, you know, like diving deep into these rabbit holes of social media. And, you know, it's really easy to forget that today could be our last day. And having to finally, you know, and for me, it was like in a short span of time, I think. So because my son's dad passed away when he was 26, we were almost the same. He was 25. And so since then, it was kind of like that sort of hit me, but I didn't really process it until later when his father died, which I was really close to, you know, and me having to realize that, like, my son had experienced this death, and then, you know, his great grandmother died. And it was just like watching that and then thinking back about like how they lived their lives and being like, okay, if I had gone through that, if I had been, you know, my father-in-law who died that day, and I had experienced what I've experienced now, would I be happy with what I did? That right there sort of makes you like think.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's looking back. I'm sorry that you dealt with all that loss, especially at an early age. I mean, to have a child and to lose his father at 26, that's, I mean, I can't even imagine you being able to process that at 26 and having to go on because you have a child in front of you. You know, that could take years because you just need to get up every day and be this person. I mean, you know, that's still a human being there that needs a mother. So my hat is off to you for your experience. That it's, you know, I cannot be in your shoes, but you definitely have my empathy with that. And I think loss is a big part which makes people reflect. And I think the important verbiage is reflect and not regret. Because your unique experiences lead you to these places. And just to have that type of awareness and awakening at any point in your life is a gift. It may be very unfortunate that, you know, you didn't figure this shit out when you were earlier. but when you were younger and earlier in your life. But like, I too suffered through a lot of loss that got me to this place of this record, you know, like, and that was the focal point for me. And I had an engagement to a girlfriend who was a close friend of mine for like 13 years. And we dated for about 2 years. And it was very, looking back on it now, it was not the wonderful relationship that I had hoped it would be. It was very tumultuous, to say the least. But when that relationship ended, like that relationship on a Friday night, I was coming back from a gig. On a Saturday, I got a call for a job to go to China. I went out to celebrate on a Monday after finding out I didn't owe any money on my taxes and I was actually going to pay off all my debt and be like zero balanced and like the American dream. And then on Wednesday, I was supposed to get a passport to go to China by Friday and be there for a month. So it was just like more money than I'd ever had. I thought I was celebrating like being engaged. Monday night, I go out. Tuesday morning, it's over. And by Thursday, I was a totally different person, trying to figure out what my life was going to be. And for me, it was like, okay, I had always seen this this thing. It's called Ikigai or Ikigai or I-K-I-G-A-I. And it's this Japanese philosophy that basically is your spirit inside of you. That's the word for it. And it's basically like the things that make you money, the things that make you happy, the things that the world needs, the things that you need. And in those four circles where they overlap, you have your passion, your work, and your spiritual, it's basically your center and your spiritual center. And I had the work and I had the money from that said work because I never stopped doing it. But what I didn't have was that spiritual healthy center. And because I didn't have that, I could stop drinking and I was still going to be a dick. And I was rude to people and I didn't treat my body right. I didn't. So that was a natural, that was a frequency I was creating in my body. So it was going out to other people. So when it came, push came to shove, if I had lost my girl and got all this money, what was the one thing that I'd want to do? And that was in 2016. So before that was the Bataclan attacks, which was in February, it was in November of 13th of 2015. My friend Eden and I had toured together in Green Day, and he's the guitar tech for the Eagles of Death Metal. My friend Dave Ketching was in the Eagles of Death Metal at that time. You know, I had celebrated many nights with people in that circle, and for all intents and purposes, there were fans. I'd been to a ton of those band shows in my life, and those were my friends, and I remember exactly where I was. I was working a gig at the LA Zoo when I got a text message that this terror attack happened. And I mean, it's like, it really puts into perspective, like, what is it in your life? How could you be better so you don't, like, for me, it was like if I was going to be one of those kids on the floor or at front of house where those people walked in and these terrible things happened, what would I just be like, fuck, I didn't do it. And for me, that was to make a record. And, you know, like I was saying earlier that, you know, as a somebody that's a creator and a content creator, you think everyone's going to make content about you and you just help them make content all day long. So I have to write this article for someone and spotting out a song. And I had this song that I wrote that's the first track on the record, and it happens to be the single that we're releasing. It's called I Kill You, and it's out on Spotify on February 26th. The band's called The Gamma Senin. The song was written in like 2005 when I was an angry punk, and just happened quickly, and it morphed into this thing, and it became like, as I changed, the way that I looked at the song changed. So when the Bataclan happens, I Kill You became more about like, what makes these people want to go and do all these destructive things? And then as the journey of this record happened, because it really was like, as this record got finished, I exponentially grew as a human being, because the thing that I was passionate about outside of work was fulfilling me. You know, it's like your plant needing water and like a banana peel in its soil, and that it's going to live longer. Like I needed water instead of alcohol, and I needed something that was going to give me nutrients that wasn't food. And that was to make a record. And the second I did that, chores became more fun. I was a nicer person. I'm in a relationship that's 5 years old at this point. And I have a beautiful life now because of it. And it's because I found the thing that I was passionate about. And that's, you know, that was the, you know, that was a real deciding factor in my life when I found that, you know, and I hope that a lot of people can find that in 2021, because I think it's a lot of people are missing it from the road, and you become this, like, you hear the words on tour, it is what it is, or it ain't ideal, or yep, we're, you know, toughen up, buttercup, and all these like male macho, like send the flagpole up the bullshit thing all the time. And, you know, eventually it gets old. Like, who wants to be a toughened shoe at 50 years old, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and, you know, when you were talking about the Bataclan and, like, you know, all of that happened, I kind of had like a flashback of, I just remember my ex, like, he had a show. They were going to go tour like Morocco and then go into France and do a bunch of stuff. And they had a show at that spot. And it was like, he didn't really talk to me about it very much, but he did tell me how it was scary. And he didn't want to talk about it.
Was he there?
He wasn't there, but just like you, just going after that had happened. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But going after the fact, it was scary. And he just kind of, like, you know, just didn't want to talk about it, just ignored it. But it did, that made me think definitely of like how those experiences can be really traumatic. And when you're working and you're just keeping, you know, you're just doing your job and you're going and you're toughening it up and you're just working through it, no big deal, it eventually will hit you. And so it's really important to figure out what it is that you need in order to really take care of yourself. And whether it means pursuing, you know, something that you enjoy just for the fulfillment of just the enjoyment of it, that can take you a long way.
Healthy habits go a really, really long way on the road, you know, and as I tried to get away from the unhealthy habits and find the healthier habits, then you start to kind of round out, I think, as a person, because I find that a lot of roadies are like in the roadie crew too hard. You know, like, we all know the guys that never take their laminates off and they go to the same Buffalo Wild Wings in every town, and, you know, that's their life, and good for them, man. I mean, hey, I have a lot of friends like that. It's all good. But, you know, a couple pieces of advice that I'd always got, one was like tempered steel and how steel is made by being banged on and getting tough. And that's great. And that goes into like toughen up, buttercup. But like another time, I don't know where it came from, but it was like, you can't fly like an eagle when you're surrounded by a bunch of turkeys. And I know it sounds so cheesy, but like turkeys, you don't want it, like, you know, we all fall into the traps on the road and it can get really easy and we all become this really tight knit family, but like, you got to do some things that kind of, you don't want to just be I personally didn't just want to be a roadie, you know, like that was an aspect of me. And the more that it became my life, the more frustrating I became, like when it was just like, okay, we're going to this place and it's another bar and we're all going drinking here and drinking there. Like, I found things on the road, like, I like birds and I go bird watching and I go to cemeteries by myself to go bird watching because it's quiet and I'm kind of a goth at heart. So being in a cemetery relaxes me, you know, or I will go to museums. And if you want to see everyone on tour, go to the mall and you'll run into all the same people you see every single day. If you want to run into maybe like, I don't know, the management type people or some creatives or something like that, go to a museum. Or you may not run into anybody and you may have a beautiful day in New York at or in Philadelphia or in Barcelona or in London at a museum, and you'll, you know, get away and kind of fill yourself up with some stuff. And these are the things that they don't teach you when you're on the road, that just teach you to show up on time and don't be too hungover.
Right. And you don't always get to see the city. Most of the time you don't. All you really see is the venue. And if you do get a chance to get out there, there's definitely value in experiencing the city, like by walking around and experiencing the nature of it and like the architecture and things like that, instead of, you know, going to your typical spot. So there's a nice sense of exploration that I think you can lean into.
Totally. And, you know, with that being said, that sense of exploration, you always have to weigh when you're on tour, how much sleep do you really need? Like, does your body need to recover? Are you tired? Like, these are things that you should be asking yourself while you're going into a day off, where, I mean, going to Europe is fun because every single city that you're in is great and it has great food and great culture. And most guys haven't been there that many times. So you want to go out constantly and constantly and constantly. You know, I've been to Paris two or three times, and every time I get to Paris, I'm too exhausted to do anything. And I just sleep in my hotel room all day long. You know, it's all risk. It's everything's a math equation. And we're constantly problem solving as technicians. And I think that if we took some of the same skill sets of problem solvings as we do to our job into our mental health and our physical health, we'd all probably be better at our jobs.
Well, that definitely speaks to the importance of planning ahead a little bit, right? So if you know that you're definitely going to need to catch up on sleep, like most people on their rest day, like they want to rest.
Yeah.
You can still incorporate a little bit and make a little bit of time, whether it's for a workout, maybe outside, maybe just a walk, or, you know, just to go see something. So you're still enjoying at least a little bit of the city so you don't feel so trapped in your work.
Yeah.
And then get your sleep in.
You just need to, it's like we were talking about earlier, is that little things that you do every day become your life. And it's not even planning so much. Like, okay, when I like to get up now and have a routine. So on my day off, I get 5-6 hours of sleep between the night before and this, and I wake up and I drink some water and I see where I am. And, you know, maybe I meditate or I spend an extra 10 minutes cleaning my fingernails or something like that and do a little self-care and then go get some food and explore. I mean, touring is an amazing lifestyle where you get to meet thousands of interesting people. You get to make millions of people happy. Even if you don't like the music, the people that are there to see the show like the music. So, you know, it is truly a unique gift to experience this lifestyle. And with any type of jobs, there are pains that come with it. And, you know, I think that after this pandemic, I think as a culture of road crew, I hope we see a shift. I think we will, because first off, a lot of the older people are just not going to want to tour anymore. There's going to be more restrictions. There's still going to be COVID scares. And you're going to see a younger generation that's like hungry and ready to go and not have a lot of the baggage of like a rock and roll lifestyle that does not exist anymore on the road. In rare cases it does, but you know, maybe for Marilyn Manson's camp, but definitely not for a lot of other bands.
So let's talk a little bit about expectations versus reality. Tell me a little story, just because I always love lessons when they come in stories. So tell me about a little story where that really made sense for you, like expectation and reality didn't quite line up.
I mean, expectations or reality. I liked Guns N' Roses when I was a kid, and I thought the road was going to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and I thought it was totally accepted. and the reality of it is that it kind of is, but it's kind of not. And you know, touring sounds great. And I thought it was just going to be like a constant road of everything getting better and better. But like, you still go back and you have these gigs where you spend, like, no one will ever tell you in any of these like Full Sail schools or on the road that like you will sit in the lobby of hotels for hours with a bunch of grown men that act like children and do the rudest like behavior you've ever seen for hours. And that's going to be your life on the road. You like, sure, there's confetti cannons, there's the women at front of house or whatever you're into. And it looks like big, but what big, bright, shiny lights. But when that torrential hail comes down and the feeder still needs to get pulled up, you will be that person pulling up that feeder. I guarantee it. And you will end up sitting in a hotel room or in a hotel lobby the next day for 4 to 5 hours with those same wet socks on, waiting to get your room. And that's the reality of the music industry. That's the reality of touring. And when you get your room, something's going to be wrong with it.
Oh, man. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, this whole thing that happened with COVID, it's kind of like that. It's like one day where like that happened, but like on a grand scale, and it happened to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, the things that people would do in a pre-COVID world compared to when people said that touring was going to come back in the summertime and that it was only going to be a short pause. And I was just like, are you kidding me? You can't even keep tours healthy under normal times. You know, like when I was on the Shakira tour, we had the European leg, we had one of the just most nightmarish buses you could possibly have. No circulation. There was water in the double pane glass, and it just always had this kind of haze to it. And it wasn't really it didn't have a back lounge or a double decker. It wasn't any of this. We had the greatest bus driver. The bus driver was amazing. We had a really, really great crew. And shout out to all my video guys from the Shakira El Dorado tour. But everyone on that tour started getting sick as we toured around Europe. So I, having been recording this record, would fly home from tour and then go directly into, at this point in the record, it was vocal sessions. So it was really important for me to stay healthy and, you know, in a very selfish way. And knowing that I couldn't be on a bus with sick people, I just started making, me and my video director, Joe Priester, we would make like 3 gallons of pressed juice a day, and we'd give it out to the guys on tour. And my bus was the only bus on the entire tour to not get sick in that European leg. And, you know, those are those healthy habits that make a difference. And everybody at first was just like, oh, what is this? Your juice? Like, why don't you do something with the course of your day? Because I was like a server guy. I didn't have to build the wall with them or set up cameras. And my jobs during the day weren't as physically demanding as theirs. So I would make sure that they were healthy. And, you know, we didn't get sick. But I had been on tours where I got bronchitis and I couldn't see a doctor for days. And I got everyone sick. And like, I went and had to get tested for a job that I have next week. Thank God I have a job. But I mean, if I sneeze wrong in a room now that I'm working on, like 6 people look at you. I couldn't imagine. I don't know what it's going to be like when they try and tour. I hope they pull it off.
I know, right? But with you, at least on that tour, it seems like it was a little bit of self-preservation. You know, it's like if you take care of yourself, you take care of everybody else, they can't get you sick. You can still go record your album. Mm-hmm. It's all good. And, you know, I love that because, you know, one of my big pipe dream goal is to help there be like a wellness advocate on every tour. That's kind of how I put it all in a nutshell.
I mean, you're going to have to smoke something to sell that with Live Nation.
But, you know, and a wellness advocate isn't necessarily like somebody who does like, you know, like a health coach, like you just have a health coach on tour. Like that's not necessarily it. It's also somebody like you, like who, you know, you took something good and healthy and you brought it on tour with you and it helped everybody on your bus and it allowed everybody to have a higher quality of life while they were on tour.
Totally. And there are people like that on tours, on every tour, that there are healthy people. And like I said, like, you can't fly like an eagle when you're surrounded by a bunch of turkeys. When we were on the Duran Duran tour, our rigger Jules, who just happened to also go on to the Shakira tour like I did, we had the 5 o'clock push-up club. And at 5 o'clock every day, we would all get around and take our shirts off and do some push-ups on the deck for a while, or not on the deck, but on the loading dock or something like that. And, you know, just having like little rituals like that. Like I used to bring a jump rope with me everywhere, and I jump rope for like 10 minutes a day. And, you know, you got to find the things that make you happy, and it does kind of elevate, and, you know, it happens just as easily as the bad things happen. You know, if everybody's like calling the guy in every city and drinking cases of beer every night, then more people are going to do that. But then all of a sudden, you know, what started as 4 people doing push-ups is now 15 people that are doing push-ups. And it may not last, but at least it's there. And at least you know it's an option.
Well, it's contagious, right? Just like the virus is contagious, so is a good habit.
Hopefully. Good is a little harder to make contagious because, you know, this feels so good to be bad sometimes.
I know. I know that definitely exists, and it's exciting to have people talk about it out loud and to make it find a way to kind of turn it into the norm, so that, you know, when people know that you're not being the weirdo because you're trying to, you know, do some good, like it's actually acceptable in it. And hopefully, you know, we can create a culture that's a little bit more inclusive and in lots of ways, but also when it comes to wellness. So that's really exciting.
I agree. And I think that there is a shift. And I think that it, you know, like with anything that takes change, it's a one-on-one experience with each human being, and dumb as and as it sounds and cliche as it sounds, it's really how you interact with people on a regular basis. It takes a lot to break down the old garb, as I think we've seen in the past, you know, 10 years in the world. To change institutions takes a lot, and to break ways of thinking takes a lot of effort. But right now, I think we have a unique opportunity where, you know, the old style has been shattered, and we could pick up the pieces in a unique way and make it kind of cool. So hopefully some of that is like, you know, artists making sure that their crews are fed in a healthy way, and like not just pull out cheap grilled cheese and tater tots for lunch for a group of 80 grown ass people, you know. And, you know, those are the things, you know, not every tour gets its own juicer, you know, that could be a thing. And, you know, like making those healthy choices. I mean, there's still going to be all the fun and reckless choices, because let's be honest, that's who we are as a culture. We did not, nobody's like, oh, I want to be a good boy and go on a bus.
It's that 80-20 rule, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, 20% of the time, do whatever the hell you want, but like, try to be good, at least the majority.
The industry alive, right? Where would they be without road crew? But, you know, just trying to make healthier decisions. And I mean, trust me, I am not an angel. I have made all of the unhealthy decisions, and my knowledge from coming from 20 from last year and trying to hit the reset button on my own personal life has you know, put things into perspective. And going forward, I hope that the industry, you know, isn't so hard on everybody.
So Kevin, tell me a little bit about your record and one thing that you learned through the process of recording.
Let's see. My record and the band's called The Gamma Senin. It was produced with my friend Peter Franco, who is the front of house sound engineer for Daft Punk, and then went and became their studio engineer and won a whole bunch of Grammys with Daft Punk for their Random Access Memories record and for their Alive record. It was famously the big pyramid that they toured. And my bass player is in Oingo Boingo. We went out to the Rancho de la Luna, which is like the Queens of the Stone Age Eagles, like Dave Ketching, who was in the Eagles of Death Metal, his studio that's got some big, you know, it's a pretty cool historical place for rock music, especially modern rock. And so I made this record for it took about 4 years to make. It was a real journey. My friend John Avila from Oingo Boingo plays on it. My friend Dimitri Coates from Off and the Burning Brides, and a bunch of other people, it was obviously a big team effort. And, you know, the biggest thing that I got out of this journey, other than just like that destruction of the older version of myself, that it was destroying me, because that's kind of what the narrative is. This whole record is about finding your authenticity and destroying that old version of yourself, becoming a next phase, which is kind of what we're all experiencing as a culture. But, you know, the journey of this record really taught me the value of who you work with and who you surround yourself with, and that nothing is done by yourself. You know, I have a uniquely tunnel vision perspective about a lot of things sometimes. And, you know, sometimes it looks like, I don't want to say narcissism, but, you know, I'm a singer in a band and I'm an alpha male. I can pat myself on the back all day long and better than anybody else, I promise. But, you know, it does really take a whole team. And, you know, as in my career, I was always very focused on my own unique job. I was always sent out on jobs by myself. I'd have to take care of everything by myself and I'd just be focused and then go back to the hotels and isolate and then focus back on my job. And, you know, making this record really has taught me so much about community. I don't consider myself to have a band, that I have a collective because of the way things work and just how important it is to, you know, find your authentic self. And then it's kind of like the field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. And that was the biggest lesson I got through all this. It's that, like, you know, if you've got that, that's like city. I don't know. Have you seen that movie City Slickers? Billy Crystal. I don't know.
I never saw it.
Oh, that's all right. There's Jack Palance is this character and he's like this old cowboy and his name's Curly. And he's like, you got to find that one thing. And, you know, you do have to, I found my passion. And that's the biggest thing I learned from that journey is that, you know, you find that one thing and money is painful sometimes, but it'll come. And, you know, have something you're passionate about other than your work. You should be passionate about your work, but be passionate about, I don't know, colored pencils or something that has nothing to do.
And then
do
just put it
work.
Out there, right?
Yeah, I mean,
just create and put it out there.
Realize putting it out there does take up team.
Yeah, I don't think any of us really, you know, as much as we think we can go at it alone, it takes a village.
Nope. You even to have a podcast, you need to have interesting people on it.
Oh,
you know, it's tough,
yeah.
Right? It's not, yeah, my buddy wanted me to start a podcast. I'm like, man, that's a full-time job.
No, it is, honestly. And then I have one last question, and it goes back to the fact that you have a green thumb.
Ah, yeah. It's like they're my babies. Okay.
What part do your plants play in your life? And would you recommend that everybody gets a plant to take care of?
Yeah. I mean, I think taking care of any living creature kind of shows you where you're at and how much attention you want to give into it. I personally love to grow plants. You know, during the pandemic, we moved in April, the first couple weeks of it. So we ended up like upscaling pretty good. And I have a yard and this two-story room with a glass walls on it. And I've had these fiddly figs for like 5 or 6 years now. So one of them's like 11 feet tall and the other one is like 7 feet tall and it branches out. And my trick, the fiddly figs are African fig, they're African trees. So they go dormant in the winter time, which is when you're supposed to load them up on nitrates, which can be found in coffee. So I have been pouring coffee into my fiddly figs for months. And now that it's warm enough, because it's, you know, you're in Arizona, right? So it's warm. It's 60, 70
Chicago,
degrees here.
So it's over here.
Oh, Chicago.
Yeah, over
sorry.
Here it's like 2
but
degrees.
I think you're in Arizona. Yeah. Okay. So it's not like that. It's warm here. It's 60 degrees. You'd be on vacation in shorts and flip-flops outside. And they're just loving it. And then I have in my my girlfriend has her own bathroom and I have my own bathroom now, and it has a skylight in it, and I have a bunch of plants and orchids in there. And I bought an orchid in August, and when it was, the last flower was falling off, it rebudded and it started flowering again. And it's now like on, it's got like four flowers going on it again after it lost all of its flowers. So we're looking at 6 months with flowers on an orchid and regrowth on, like, and I have a couple of orchids that are all doing that right now. I grew some pretty big weed plants over the summer last year. That was pretty nice. I've got like a whole series of tomatoes and kale going on because we eat a lot of kale. So for me right now, it's kind of part of those healthy habits that I needed to have at home, because I go absolutely crazy all day long here by myself because my girlfriend's at work. So I'm sowing the seed. So I've never really had the room to be a gardener, but like I am growing my tomatoes from seeds this year because I don't plan on working much. And because it's, you know, hopefully I work a lot and all these plants die, to be perfectly honest, because I'd much rather be able to afford a whole bunch of tomatoes.
You're like, I love you guys, but if I gotta go to work, I gotta.
And if I gotta go to work, I can't explain my. But you know, it's. I've always been really, really interested about stuff like that, like birds. I like birds and national parks and museums, and growing plants has been great. I'm really proud of the fact that I've got three really healthy ferns right now. I've never been able to get ferns to live. I've got some really nice ivy plants. You know, my girlfriend will get the same type of flower or the same plant as I did at the same time, and hers will die in like 2 weeks and mine are still blooming. So, you know, every day I'm like, look at this flower, Serena. Like, so I've got the green thumb. I'm not picking battles. We've been together 5 years. Like I love her to death. And I'm just like, look, I know, you know,
you're like, let me have my happiness.
Yeah, I need it. And my fiddly figs are doing so good. I'll send you some pictures of them. Like, they're on my Instagram page. You're on my Dr. M11 Instagram. So they're on my page. I take pictures of it. It's better than watching paint dry, you know, coffee.
I love it.
They like coffee.
Amazing. You know, I'm going to definitely, I might give my snake plant a little bit of coffee grounds or something.
Yeah, you know, the coffee kind of helps. The snake plants are pretty easy. You just, you know, what you could really do is just take a look at it and repot it and give it some new soil. The type of soil you buy is really important. I use a soil called Fox Farms. It's actually a type of soil that's really popular with marijuana cultivators. So it's really healthy. And they use a lot of like I live by the beach. So when I go redo my flower beds, I'll put seaweed in the bottom of it, you know, like little tricks. I got a lot of time on my hands.
Sweet.
Yeah, get it. I mean, it's expensive, you know, it can be, but it's good. And just like replanting that, if you've got a pot and you replant your snake plant, put a banana peel at the bottom of the pot and then put the soil over it. And then and then it'll have nutrients there for when that banana peel like does its thing, it's still going to give the soil more nutrients and, you know, amazing. Give it water.
I've been wanting to repot it, but I've been a little bit scared.
Don't be scared. You got to get your hands dirty, you know?
I'm going to do it.
It's okay.
Then.
Do it.
You know? Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. I'm so excited. I'm probably going to go repot my snake plant like tonight. Because the poor thing has been suffering. And I have like a baby. I have like two babies, because that's why I got this one, because it had like two little sprouts and then it had like the main one. So
super thrive. Plants die. If it looks like a part's dying, get rid of it, you know?
Yeah. And then it'll sprout a new one. All right. Well, I'll talk to you soon. And this was a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Are some key takeaways from my conversation with Kevin McGuire. 1. There's more to wellness than sobriety, eating the right food, or getting your workout in every single day. Wellness is really more about learning to listen to your mind, body, and soul, and getting in tune with their needs. 2. Experiencing loss can force us to reflect on where we are in life and how we got there. It can help us find perspective where we couldn't before. It can help us move forward with the lessons of the past, and it can help us zero in on our passion. And three, healthy habits go a really long way on the road, as well as at home. It's all about identifying what lights you up and what doesn't. Surround yourself with people and situations that enable the good feelings, not the bad. Little things that you do every single day, those are what become your life. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Kevin a follow on Instagram at dr_m_11 and at the Gamma Senin. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.